Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Geekscapists, welcome to our brand new Geekscape episode. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and if this is your first Geekscape, what do you say around here? Strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk, movies, video games, combos, TV, all of that stuff. We're getting close to LA Comic Con in 2 months. It's the first weekend of December. I think I submitted like 8 panels to LA Comic Con. It's the second and the third at the LA Convention Center. I don't know the main stage panels that they'll give me. Obviously, I'll try and get the audio of those panels, and they'll be right here on the audio feed. If you're listening to this on the podcast feed, maybe on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, you're in the right place. You're going to get all of those celebrity interviews and some of the panels. If you're watching this on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, what's keeping you from going over to your podcasting app? It's a lot easier. You shouldn't be driving and watching this. You probably shouldn't be watching it at work either. And just click subscribe to the Geekscape podcast, the audio version, and you'll be getting all the extra content that I'm recording for you guys at conventions and stuff, where I can't exactly be streaming on YouTube in the middle of the LA Convention Center on the main stage, okay? Like, I can't be doing that. I can't be walking around with my phone. We're not going to be doing Instagram Live or anything with LeVar Burton on the main stage when that's happening. Can't do it. But if you subscribe to the podcast, you get everything, including this episode. All right, I've got my good friend Kai Dodson on the show. You may know him if you're into pop punk bands. He was in a band called The Army of Freshmen. It's up to you whether or not it has a "the" on the front of that. A lot of people just say Army of Freshmen, but I try and give it a little bit of authority, the Army of Freshmen. I don't think it has the "V" on it. And he's on the show. We've been hanging out. We went to see our friend Max Bernstein on Sunday night. He had first time in like 13, 16 years had his band, The Actual, get back together. And they were awesome. And they had more people in the audience than they ever did when they were not broken up before this little reunion gig over in downtown LA. But we got together, we hung out, we talked a ton of comics at dinner, and I was like, hey, you got to come on Geekscape and hang out with me and talk music, talk comics, talk about what you've been up to. Kai, I think he's a super interesting dude. We've been hanging out, super buds. And so he's on the show and we're going to be talking comics. So you better be ready for comics and probably be talking movies and all that. Ahsoka's finishing up, so that you're going to get that special here coming very soon where we wrap up all 7 episodes of Ahsoka. I lost count. I just kind of been enjoying them. You know, I'm trying to be less hypercritical of the content because I think it depresses me. Do you understand this, Geekscapists, where you want to be critical. You want to have some critical acumen in the material that you digest, whether you're reading comics or movies or a book or listening to an album. You want to be critical of it. You want to be able to analyze it. You want to be able to appreciate it. But there is a tipping point. And when you go to that tipping point where it turns into criticism and you maybe start to tear things, maybe you start to tear into things. And when things start being too negative and you can't appreciate it for the joy that it can bring, in Star Wars, obviously, is one of those. We have some Star Wars that we love and we have some Star Wars that, let's go with, just wasn't for us. When you start to paint everything with that brush, you find yourself spending hours watching things like Ahsoka or the new Obi-Wan Kenobi series or... let's go with Boba Fett. That one may not be so high on the tomato meter. Not that people aren't paying for Rotten Tomato scores, we found out, as if there was any guesses that they weren't. We all kind of thought that something was going on there, the modern day payola of film reviewing. If you start to get a little too critical, you look up and you realize how much money, how much time, how much of your social interactions have been based on this stuff. You can turn into a bit of negative Nancy's. And I've been absolutely guilty of that a lot, to the point where some of my interactions with friends, like, I don't need to crush their joy. I don't need to take it away from them. And I've been working on that with myself. Why do I mention that when it comes to Ahsoka? I think Ahsoka's awesome. But when I talk to friends, some of them are like, yeah, it's not for me. It's like, you know, it's not my Star Wars. Or some of them will just downright say Star Wars is dead. Star Wars is for kids. All of these things can be true. And I think we got to live in a geekdom of acceptance where all of these things can be true. It cannot be. It doesn't have to be for you, but it can still be for them. But if you spend your time not enjoying something, let's start thinking about better ways to spend our time. You can let go of things too. But I don't know. I think I had something to say and I just turned it into a TED talk, and Kai's sitting in the waiting room being like, right on. Or maybe, what the heck is he talking about? Maybe you're asking that yourself as you're like, you know what? Maybe I should get back to work instead of listening to Geekscape while at work, because work was more entertaining than this dude droning on. I'm just kidding. We got a kick-ass episode for you guys. You're not going to want to turn this off. You're going to want to crank up the jams, because I got Kai Dodson coming up. We're going to talk comics. We're going to talk music. We're going to talk all that stuff. And it starts right here with Geekscape. Heck yeah, Geekscapists. If you listen to that theme song, you just listen to the... I actually was going to say the sounds of our friend Steve Sabosley from Punchline. I actually think that was when Nick was in the band. Oh, no, John Bellin. And I think that was actually John Bellin's voice during that era of Punchline. The John Bellin Just Say Yes era of Punchline. They just put that thing back out on vinyl. So if you guys enjoy Punchline, you like the Just Say Yes album, it's available with our good friends Punchline over at their merch store on vinyl. That just popped in my head because I realized I was about to pimp out Steve Sabosley, and it was John Bellin singing those songs, the theme song for Geekscape. But Steve wrote it. Speaking of things Steve wrote, as a segue to my good friend Kai, who's waiting here to talk comics, Steve's got a brand new project. It's called Maybe Aliens. And I just found out about it today, but my friend Kai's been keeping secrets because I hung out with him on Sunday and he didn't mention no Maybe Aliens project that Steve has been sending him songs from for like a week now. And I'm a fan of anything Steve does musically. And it includes another friend of mine from even before I knew Steve and Kai, Heath Saraceno, whose band Midtown used to play my radio show all the time. And when this Maybe Aliens thing hit, Geekscapists who love the music that we sometimes promote here on the show, go check out Maybe Aliens over on Spotify. They got a brand new song out, and they're going to really be releasing about five more tracks over the coming weeks before they have a full EP for you guys. I start listening to this Maybe Aliens track, and then I follow them on Instagram, and I comment that I'm their biggest fan, at least until you guys get on the bandwagon. You guys can be the biggest fans. And Heath and I connect over Instagram. Like today, right now, we connect like an hour before the show. We started like texting each other. And that led me to be like, dude, remember the old times of being on WXPN in Philadelphia and recording Midtown, like live on the radio and then doing all that cool stuff? And it was crazy because we were just talking about Midtown. Because they played a place called Skate Street in Ventura. And for 20 years, I didn't know the name of this venue that had a skate park and a concert venue in one in Ventura. And I went up there to see Midtown in the Stereo back in 2000. And who else was there in that building? At that time, I wouldn't know him for several more years. This man right here, Kai Dodson. And I stopped in the middle of dinner. I said, wait, you would be the perfect person to answer this question. What was the name of that venue? And he said... What'd you say?
Skate Street.
It's Skate
it's
Street.
Called Skate Street. Yeah.
You grew up in Ventura, and Skate Street was such a cool place because I just remember bands rocking out and kids skateboarding and doing crazy tricks as you're listening to bands. I thought it was such a cool warehouse turned into skate park slash concert venue. And thank you for like answering that question that I'd had for 20 plus years.
I'm happy to help. I'm glad you came to the right person.
And how that awesome that like 2 days later, this maybe aliens thing comes out and it's got our friend Steve, of course, who you and I reconnected hanging out with over down in what Denny's
in San Diego.
After a punchline show and doing some hacky sacking. And then Heath and I started texting each other after that. And Heath performed in Midtown on that Skate Street show. It's crazy. And then of course, Sunday we go to see Max Band and he and I reconnect. He was my screenwriting teacher's nephew, which is how I know Max Bernstein.
Oh, how fascinating.
And my screenwriting teacher, when I moved to Los Angeles, said, you got to connect with my friend, my nephew, Max. And Max is Nora Ephron's son. So he's involved in film. My screenwriting teacher, Jerry, was Delia Ephron's husband. So it was all family. And Max and I talked about how we could collaborate with the video like for a long time. And then his band broke up. The actual broke up and then played the first show in 16 years on Sunday. And you and I were definitely going to be there. We were. That's the story, Geekscapists.
And they're great. Great band. definitely check them out if you've not heard them. They made two albums and both are very good. Excellent band.
Love them. And I hope those albums are available on streaming because Radio Idaho?
Radio Idaho is. I don't think the second one's in stitches. I don't think that one is, but the first one's great.
We can find ways to get it to you, Geekscapists. We can find ways. So people may possibly on this show right now, recording this podcast for you. We might. I'm not going to do piracy. I'm not going to condone that in front of a guest. Chris Fafalios is in the comments. He says, hell yeah. There's my old buddy, Kai.
Oh, hi, Chris. Chris is the best.
Chris has this other band called Another Cheetah. Another band, Another Cheetah. And I guess Steve has run off and done his other band. Maybe Aliens. That is like a... is that a middle-aged... boys rock supergroup? This may be Aliens. Who are the members in this band? Do you know? I mean, I just know Heath and Steve.
Yeah, and then the drummer, I think, is a Nashville guy, maybe. I saw he plays with a bunch of Amanda Shires, a bunch of people like that. I did a little digging after Steve posted that. So
it sounded good.
Bunch of ringers, which is another cheat, is the same thing. Just a bunch of pros.
A bunch of pros. And our friend Chris Fafalios, he's on the network. These are all friends. I actually texted Steve. This is what I said to Steve. I said, hey, I like the Maybe Alien stuff. I'm going to be on Geekscape with Kai. You want to drop in and surprise us? Maybe surprise Kai. And he says, hey, fun. And he says, I sent it to Kai last week. You were pretty mum on Sunday, not bringing this up. Okay, listen, if Steve has any music,
didn't know he's dropping.
Tell me about it. Okay. And I said, do you want to drop in? And he says, I got time with the wife planned. So I said, listen, send the baby to be on Geekscape. They have a baby now. Send the baby. You and your wife can have yourselves a date and just I'll put the baby on Geekscape. And he says, man, in relation to the baby, he says, I cannot wait to hacky sack with him. And so that's you and I in San Diego with the Punchline Boys hacking at 2-3 a.m. outside of a Denny's, like grown men do, and Chris Fafalios was there of the One Hit Thunder podcast that you guys can listen to. It's Geekscape. It's a Geekscape podcast. It's fun. It's
one of my favorite podcasts. It's great.
Those boys have taken it to lengths and to heights that I couldn't have dreamed. I love those guys. And I love him and Matt. Obviously, I talk to Matt every day. He runs the podcast network. And we're super proud of everybody. I actually spent Sunday with other podcasters on the network. Diallo Jackson, who does our Battlestar Galactica podcast. And the two boys, Zach and Dustin from To Our Late Fee. We did a screening of Diallo's motion comic, Angel in the Dark. And it was fun. I was like, this is crazy. I can't go... a day without tripping into something Geekscape related or music related or somebody from the last 20 years, like Keith coming back up in my memory. But I think that's just what happens when you survive long enough in this life. You know what I mean? It's crazy. Definitely. Have you not been a guest on One Hit Thunder? Have you just not been a guest?
I've not. No. I listen. I love it.
Right, let me pull some strings.
Okay.
Let me pull some strings.
No pressure.
Chris is in the comments saying, "Kai, holy cow, come be a guest on One Hit Thunder."
Done. Like, absolutely.
Okay. We're gonna get that. Yeah. We're gonna get that. Let me call some people. Let me call Matt Kelly. Okay. Kai, how you been, man? Do we want to talk about your origin story? I think the audience who may be like, "What the hell are these dudes talking about?" Need to know a little bit more about you beyond just my intro. Like, obviously, Army of Freshmen was a fun Ventura pop punk band mm-hmm. in the era of like the height of Drive Thru Records, and what were some of the other labels that were running around there with the pop punk bands?
Yeah. Kung Fu, Nitro, the Fuel by Ramen was coming up. I mean, you know, Vagrant was local, obviously, getting there. And there was a band from our same area that we grew up with that were on Vagrant. So that was one that was around quite a bit.
I mean, who was that?
That was No Motive.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. That was a good band.
They're good friends. I mean, we all grew up going to the same shows, doing the same thing. So that was, you know, Vagrant was around a lot. Drive Thru, as you mentioned, was kind of big powerhouse for a minute. What were the other labels around then? Hopeless was coming up. Yeah.
Hopeless is still there. Hopeless is
still around. Yeah.
Hopeless, if anything, is like kind of caught in the net a lot of the bands as some of those labels have like waned or gone through different, you know, obviously Fuel by Ramen became like this massive thing over at Island and this meant, but as other labels have kind of like fallen off or disappeared or been absorbed into other things, they've caught a lot of those bands like Newfound Glory and Yellow Card and continue to put out those albums. And the albums are, I think, as high quality as they ever were. You know, I enjoy those albums the same as I think, you know, if you're stuck in the music you listen to when you're 20 years old, as I am, like, I think it's still good. I think those albums are still as good as any of that stuff. What about the Army of Freshmen? What about these kids? Like, why not? Why, you know, bring them back as the Army of Sophomores or something? Like, what's happening with you guys?
I mean, we still do stuff. We're still very close. All of us. We're all, you know, most every one of us actually now, except for Dan, one of the keyboard players. We all have kids. We're all married. We're, you know, everybody's split up. Our drummer. The big complication is our drummer lives in the Chicago area. So if we want to do anything, it's, you know, we want to be the same people. We switched drummers for one record and it just wasn't the same. Like, we are these six people. And if we're going to do it, we're going to do it with these six people. So, but we put out new songs, I want to say maybe 5 years ago, we put out three new songs. We still meet up, all of us. I have a project that's in the works right now with one of the other guys. I made a children's record with a few of the guys that came out at the end of last year. It's about a year old. So we're still around doing the thing. We did a UK tour, I want to say 2018. And we did some shows with Nerf Herder last year, as you were there, you remember. Mm-hmm. So we're still around. We're just doing that modern kind of quiet, you know, we're not going away, but none of us can do it full time. We all have regular gigs now.
And talk to me about that. Cause you revealed to me in your Keeping Secrets, which is the theme of our dinner, I guess, on Sunday. in your Keeping Secrets on Sunday, you told me that you've been like scoring some media projects.
Yeah, it's right. What I do a lot of my music work now, I do scoring stuff and songwriting stuff and production stuff. So right now I am working on a horror movie that is five. It's called Pandora's Parlor Thus Far. I assume that will be the title. It's gone pretty far, but it's five vignettes. Each vignette has a different writer director. And then there's an overarching story that ties everything together. So I don't want to give away too much about the plot, but it's really, really cool. And I'm working on the first vignette right now, which is called Lumira Prism. And it's, again, without giving away too much, it has to do with sort of supernatural VR. Let's say that much.
It's like a Black Mirror type thing, maybe?
Sort of. It is definitely on that, in that world. That there's, you know, a little sci-fi, a little horror, mixes the genres for sure. A little bit of, you know, very interesting, very fast. I don't want to give away too much because it's still in production and I don't know how much I'm at liberty to say, but yeah. So Lumiere Prism is the short, but the overarching thing is Pandora's Parlor. And the, it's super fun. I mean, I've been a horror fan always. Horror is my number one genre as far as movies go. And I've never worked on a horror movie before. I usually get a lot of family stuff. So being able to finally put all this research that I've done all these years listening to horror soundtracks to work has been really fun. So actually working on that all day today before we got on the phone here.
You call it research, but you're just a horror fan as we go into Halloween month.
Yes, big time.
Talk to me about that, because you've never really, you and your secrets, you've never, I mean, it's like, I mean, I actually think that you're super interesting because of that, because you and we know each other better than we did when we were kicking hacky sacks in Denny's. I don't think either of us would have bailed the other one out of jail if we would have, you know, maybe kicked the hacky sack through the window. It's probably happened to some of the Punchline guys. But talk to me about that, because that's an interest I didn't know that you had. And it seems like a pretty passionate interest when it comes to horror movies. Where did that start?
So that started when I was really young. I was always sort of the kid that was into the creepier things. I was like the Halloween episodes of Garfield and the Halloween episode of, you know, when those would come on, that was like, you know, religious in my house. I was like, you know, parents don't talk to me, please let me sit down and watch the new Treehouse of Horror. You know, and I got Ghostbusters was sort of the tipping point. That was the first movie I saw that I was, you know, I was 5 or 6 and it just blew my mind. And that opening scene with Librarian scared the bejesus out of me, but I was hooked with that feeling. And then that was sort of the beginnings of Nightmare Before Elm Street and Friday the 13th and all of that. So I was talking about this with my mom's hairdresser, and she was like, oh, she was 20 something. She was like, I have all those movies. If you want to watch any of them, let me know. She had the two VCR set up where she was bootlegging. For those that don't know this, back in the day when things were VHS, you'd have to rent a movie. You couldn't buy a movie that came out, or you could, but they were like hundreds of dollars.
$200. Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have two VCRs and you would have a blank VHS and a regular VHS tape and you dub them. So she had all these
dubbed
movies. Maybe
you dub it on long play so it would look a little fuzzy, but you don't care. Yeah. You have like 6 movies on one thing.
You always dub. I mean, people I knew always dubbed the long play just like that. So she had this tape that had the first Friday the 13th and the first Nightmare on Elm Street on one tape. Now, her giving this to a 6-year-old is a whole nother story. But my mom had no idea. What she thought this was along the Ghostbusters lines and this sort of harmless thing. She had no idea. And
just about a child molester killer who's got knives on his hand. And you know, just about a bunch
graphic violence.
Like, just about a bunch of teenagers having sex in a cabin and gets killed by a guy with a hockey mask.
Yeah, crazy. No big deal. So hairdresser gives me this tape and I go home and I watch it. And I know what's on this. And I know that if my parents can't see this, they're going to take it away from me. So I just wait until they're asleep and I pop it on the VHS. I creep out in the dark and I watch both of those movies. And then I was like, I have to do this every time I can. At one point, probably the third watch in A Nightmare on Elm Street, at the beginning scene when Freddy is dragging that woman over the ceiling and, you know, back's getting scratched open and, you know, from the invisible attacker,
Tina.
Tina. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my dad walks out and he just looks at me and just goes, what are you watching? And I explain, he's like, does your mom know? And I was like, no. And he's like, and he goes, just don't watch it around her. And my dad walks away and I'm like, what? But then I hear them talking in the other room and I'm like, it's over. And my mom walks out and she's like, what's going on? So she sits down and she stops it and then gets up the next morning and watches it. And I don't know what she said to the hairdresser, but I assume it was just like, what are you doing? Why are you letting my 6-year-old borrow these movies? But I was hooked. So at that point, my parents were like, we can't put the genie back in the bottle. You've already seen this. You seem fine. We sat down, we talked about everything I saw. And I was like, I just like being scared. It's crazy. This ghost, there's this cool man with this cool glove. Like, it's not, you know, again, so I wasn't processing it like it was this graphic
trauma
situation.
Yeah.
So they from that point on said, cool, you can watch these horror movies, but we want to watch them with you. We want to talk about it afterward. And they did. They're not horror movie fans. My dad does not like anything even tense. He doesn't even like tense action movies. And they did. And they allowed me to do this. And it's been a passion ever since. I have a Leatherface tattoo on my arm from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Like, I'm it's real. I love, absolutely love horror movies. Like October, I can't wait. I watch horror movies all October. And it's and my wife hates them. My daughter hates them.
Oh, well, it Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is the funny one.
Yeah, it's the funny one. I think
it's the funny one.
But it's so
it's
good.
Meta, it's meta and it's genius.
It's yeah, it's absurd, but it's fantastic. Dennis Hopper's his performance in that is incredible. It's incredible.
And Kai,
I love it.
The hairdresser, when she got fired,
she didn't, and my mom did not stop getting her haircut from her.
Okay. I was about to say, like, one day your mom's haircut just changes, and the hairdresser's like, way to rat me out, you little bastard.
Who knows what she was. She probably felt bad about it afterward, but I don't know.
I think she
changed my life, so I thank her.
For me, MTV came. I mean, we all watch the horror movies, right? Like, people have been passing around this meme of the Spanish language Chucky. And mm-hmm. people are like, look at the clip. The Spanish language Chucky is so much better. And I'm like, that is my Chucky. Like, my Tio Rafa in Guadalajara, like, he let us watch Chucky. By that time, I was Chucky. Let's check it, Matt Kelly, who's like probably screaming at me right now as he fact checks. If Chucky's late 80s, yeah, I'm still maybe single digits when Chucky comes out. We're absolutely watching it in Spanish down in Guadalajara during our summers down there with our mm-hmm. cousins. And that is the best fucking Chucky because he's railing in Spanish, calling her a bitch and all this crazy stuff. But by that point, I had definitely been Jason and Freddy. An alternating Halloweens for at least 2-3 years. I just like Freddy because he's funny. Like Freddy's yeah, funny, totally. And you don't think about the fact that he was killing kids. And Jason,
and like you said, he's a pedophile and he's a child. You know, all
he's
these
fucking
crazy,
horrible.
It's horrible, but and you root for Freddy. After the first one, maybe after the second one, by the third one for sure.
You just want to see the creative kills. It's like watching Tom yes. Green put poop on a mic. Like, you want to see like who falls for it. It's like watching.
Yeah.
You know, Nathan Felder, like, yeah, trying bullshit on people.
Absolutely.
You know, did you see that ad for the new Nathan Felder song, like show that has him? It's with Nathan Felder, you know, of Nathan For You, is doing a show with A24.
I would watch that, just on that alone.
It's called, like, The Cult or something. And it's got him and... what's her name from La La Land? Like major actress.
Oh, Emma Stone.
Emma Stone, and it feels like an A24 commercial. It comes out in the next month or so, and it's got one of the Safdie brothers in it. So it's got all it checks all the indie alternative boxes, man. And I loved that Nathan For You where he's doing the rehearsal. I thought the whole Nathan Felder rehearsal thing was fascinating and how meta it got. We've talked about it on Geekscape like crazy, but one of these ads popped up on one of my social medias as you're scrolling, ignoring your life, trying not to deal with the internal anguish of your existence and being a evolved a parasite on a molten rock flying through vacuum. You can't think about those things. So I hit this ad, and of course I recognize Nathan Felder. I'm a total fan of him, like, and let's just call him Social Experiments. And then I see it, and I'm like, oh my God, like, this looks crazy. And it's got the A24 tone of this is impending dread. You know, I was like, oh, I got to see it. And I think it's about a cult, so I'm in. Totally in. I think he's starting a
that
cult.
That sounds great.
Nathan Felder starts a cult. So in.
Seems kind of like the next, where else could he go? He's got to do something like, that long form, right?
Yeah, I love the Nathan For You stuff because when the boys come down for Comic-Con and they come like a day or two early to help me do inventory and pack the van or whatever we rent for San Diego, we'll sit around hot of summer. And we'll sit around and watch like Nathan For You or something like that. And so I watched the rehearsal and Heidi just thinks it's mean. She thinks some of that stuff is mean. And what's the other one? I think you should leave. Some of it, just the frequency of the jokes. She's like, I don't know if this is for me. And meanwhile, I'm just fucking dying. I think it's brilliant.
I get those- I get that. Those are both pretty acquired tastes as well. Like you're either on board or you are not. You know, I think you sit and you digest that and you process it and you get to the other side of it and it's either the greatest thing you've ever seen or it's like you said, you're just like, this is kind of it's weirdly gross, maybe.
Babysitters, I think, are the gateway drug for so many things. And I think Geekscape is, if you guys want to, you guys have been awesome, by the way, Geekscape. So let me just shout out to you guys. The amount of feedback I got from the Paranoias episode and you guys having an unknown band come on Geekscape and then you guys start listening to them, I think is amazing. And I loved having a DJ on the show last week and the feedback I'm getting is awesome. So let's throw this on the feedback pile. What was one of the gateway things that your babysitter got you into that maybe you shouldn't have been in at the time? I think watching Belinda Carlisle on MTV, I think that jump-started my sexuality by a few years earlier than it should have. Like, I think that kicked my puberty up, like, into Susanna gear. Hostin, like, same thing for me. Oh, my God.
Walk Like Egyptian video.
Oh, my God. When she looks back and forth. Like,
there's something happening here in my body that I don't understand.
When she looks 100%. Back and forth. And like you guys served us right up to like Kim Shattuck and like who's the girl who was on the oh my gosh, she had the like I don't know, I like the upper lips. Like Kim Shattuck just had an awesome punk rock growl and rest in peace, Kim Shattuck. Like you just know her voice in everything from NoFX to MTX to obviously the Muffs. But the Veruca Salt. Yeah. Like everything, Elastica, like it all started with the Bangles and the Go-Go's, didn't it?
Yep.
And that all started with babysitters being like, I don't care, you little bastard, if you want to watch this or not, I'm putting it on.
Yeah. And it was just on in the background. And, it, you know, there'd be every type of music. The shows were a lot less specific than they got to be in the 90s, where it would go from LL Cool J to the Go-Go's to the Bangles. I mean, you just sit as a kid and it was so much information in your brain between the music itself and the visuals that was, you know, were part of it.
I've got a theory and I see kids doing it. I see myself doing it. And I've had conversations with people of our age who talk about missing the discovery of flipping through channels, right? Like obviously now we have all this a la carte stuff. We got the Disney Plus, we've got the Paramount Plus, we've got the HBO, whatever you want to call it now. We've got the Apple TV. We have these various verticals and flipping through them. Like, I don't know, everything's a la carte. Like, you can actually go right to what you want to see. There's not a whole lot of discovery unless you get a couple of ads or, you know, you listen to Geekscape and it tells you about the new Nathan Felder show. It's TikTok. The channel flipping has turned into YouTube. And I think YouTube was first, obviously, in it. And the suggested lists that come up as you flip through a TikTok or flip through a Snapchat or flip through the discovery of a YouTube or an Instagram, that is the channel flipping. But the channels are individualized and the algorithms are like hyper individualized and marketed towards you. And I don't think there's something as romantic. You know, maybe this is me on my porch saying, hey, ain't the same as my old days. Of sitting there, at, you know, and waking up to the Pure Moods music at 2 a.m. maybe we have a romanticized view of what it was to be flipping through cable and discovering stuff in the upper recesses of, you know, once you start getting into the hundreds, shit gets a little weird there in cable. Yeah. Is there something there? Because there was no algorithm in cable. Like, you just went through every channel from sports to the movies to kids to cooking to all the different stuff. But it seems like with the algorithms, it's taking that discovery out of the game. Now it's tailored.
Thoughts? A lot less accidents. Yeah, I completely agree. The other feeling, and I had this conversation with my daughter the other night, and it was definitely, I was feeling like old guy because she completely disagrees. She's six. But it's like, I felt like, she's not bonding with things in the same way. She'll watch something and she'll watch it for like a week and then it's gone out of her brain forever versus something like, I was talking to her because she wanted to watch something like Halloween that was part of my childhood. And I put on Mad Monster Party, the old Rankin stop motion thing. And I was like, she's like, how did you just find out about this when you were a kid? And I was like, well, it was just on TV every October. So every October I watched it because that was on. And she was like, you mean it wasn't, you couldn't just watch it anytime? And I was like, no, I could watch it in October. At some point, there'd be some viewing on like one of the major channels and they would, it would, you know, or you could maybe tape it off TV if you had the capability, but it was so special to me. And it's a part of the Halloween season to me. When it gets to be October time, that's one of the things I just feel like I have to watch at some point. And with her, she was just like, okay, that's fun that that's the way you felt, old guy. But she doesn't do that with things. Like when it gets to be Christmas.
Are you doing that tapping
thing? Oh no. Sorry. They're doing construction next door. That's what that was. That was a hammer.
That's fine. Hey, you guys can continue with the construction next door. before the show, you were, I think, adjusting something on your desk. And I was
I've not done that.
No, I love you.
That was a hammer.
Nothing if not behaved, but you tell those neighbors you got a few more minutes of this and they need to behave, okay? No roofing right now. It's also like almost 6 p.m. They should take a load off. Come back tomorrow.
They start at 7 in the morning. Yeah. So anyway, I feel like my daughter doesn't have things where it becomes seasonal for her. Like if there's something she wants to see, watch, whatever it is, if it's a holiday movie or otherwise or anything, book, whatever, she'll just go at it. She'll, you know, ask for Christmas music in July. She'll want to watch The Grinch anytime. I mean, it's like or Night Before Christmas she'll put on in any random time. It's like there's no, she doesn't have the same bond with it. It's not an event. It's just a in and out versus.
And you'll binge where, it. You will watch all 6 episodes or whatever it is right away. And I think some of these outlets are starting to learn that may not always be good. Like, you know, not that it wasn't done for production reasons, but cutting Stranger Things in half, like, makes you more excited for the later Stranger Things. Maybe that also worked with something like The Witcher, where it's like, okay, you only get a few episodes and then you got to wait for the rest of them, but you're going to know that they're coming. Right. I think that binging them keeps them less precious. I got to tell you, I'm looking forward every week, whether or not, you know, what you think of Ahsoka or any of these Disney shows.
Love it.
I look forward to having something new and fresh to watch. Loki's going to hit us in a couple days, the second season of that. I'm looking forward to this stuff because say what you will about superhero fatigue or what we're going through with the pop culture stuff and how geeks are now dominant. But I like it when it's spaced out. If anything, the strike, and this strike has been hard as hell on us. It's been hard. Like Heidi and I literally waking up at like 2 a.m. like last night being like, hey, we're going to be able to make all the, like, we're going to be able to do all this. Like we're going to be good. We're going to be good. And then finally, like, waking up, you know, like we're at work or something, doing something, and like, we're like, okay, we're good. We're good. But man, it got pretty close there during the strike for a lot of us out there. I got friends who are very, very tight right now. That being said, if it forces, they're going to do what the hell they want. They're billionaires. But if it forces some of the AMPTP to rethink their strategy on just blind production, you know, they've had to pace out their productions because there's no actors, there's no writers. If it allows them to appreciate some of the work that goes into this stuff and actually make it with care, because some of this stuff, some of it got a little soft there in the creativity department. Some of it got a little soft in the writing department on some of these pop culture things. If it causes them to pace it out and really work it and make each of these things a little higher quality, then that may be one of the positives we can take from just a really hard 5 months. I mean, we watched the new This Week Tonight. And it was awesome. It just felt good to have John Oliver back narrating our reality back to us. former Geekscape appearance, John Oliver, who showed up at the Geekscape Comic-Con booth all those years ago. And I gave Purell to on camera. speaking of comics, Kai, let's talk.
Let's do it.
Let's talk, man. You dipped on the X-Men, and I told you the X-Men are kind of holding serve until their big reset. But I've talked about the X-Men on the show. It's what I'm reading. What are you reading, brother? Like, talk to me about what you're reading. You're telling me if we talk Marvel, you're talking about this Moon Knight, right?
Yeah.
Like, talk to me about this.
So fair you know, backstory, Moon Knight is my favorite Marvel character. I absolutely love the character in general, and it's a character that has been written every way possible, and some runs have been better than others, needless to say.
What do you think of the show for somebody who like maybe isn't as, you know, vested in the character or not as up to date on the character in the books and the multiple iterations? And I actually think he doesn't work for me as much as he works for you. I think he's cool, but
yeah,
because of the nature of the character and the schizophrenic like basis of the character, the chances for hit or miss actually keep me from connecting with any creative run, because I'm always scared to take it up out of fear that it's going to not be worth the dollar. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very fair assessment. The original run is incredible. It's very much, I mean, it's just classic Marvel. Some great villains come in. The Jeff Lemire run with that he did with Greg Smallwood a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago at this point, but that is a short run. If you ever want to just try one that's digestible and it's easy, it's my favorite run of Moon Knight ever. And it's a perfect story front to back. Like it's not something where it got canceled because it wasn't selling. He had a story to tell. He told it, he got it, and he got out. And it's
that's great. What I'm getting. And Geekscape, you know, Jeff Lemire, because he wrote Sweet Tooth. He wrote Essex County. He currently has this weird sort of like Kafka-esque book right now. It's called Something Flies. I love it. I mean, the underwater
fish flies.
It's beautiful. Underwater Welder. Like Jeff Lemire is an automatic buy for me. It has been since Essex County. So the Moon Knight one. Yeah, that's the one that I think is a great entry to the character. Okay. Check that off the list. We got Moon Knight. And then so take me to this Jed MacKay run.
So there was another run between that Max Bemis from Say Anything did that was just too crazy for me. It was just it was all over the place. And there were a couple plot points that were okay. But it to me, it was just too much. It went too far into the mental side of things. And it left the rest of it behind a bit.
Do rock stars like yourself, when they get into a new medium, feel like they need to prove themselves by being louder in form and substance? Like, I mean, I'm of course leaning myself towards a conversation about Gerard Way and writing for things like Umbrella Academy, which I thought was fun for the first two, three storylines. They've been adapted into the seasons of the show over on Netflix, but I actually love the Netflix stuff. No, sorry, Gerard, but I actually love the Netflix stuff, and I feel like it's a cleaner version of some of the things he was trying to say. As much as I love Gabriel Ba's artwork, I think he's incredible. I love him so much. Do rock stars need to like put their stamp on a new medium when they drop into comics? Do they need to slow it down?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm thinking back of the people that have crossed over, and there is a big... They are very bombastic in general, and that may be due to the approach. It's just a bigger rock and roll sort of approach. And I felt like the Max Bemis run was so short. I felt like he just had a story to tell, but just like you said, it was pretty messy. It was pretty big and pretty messy. And I don't know. I like some of the Marvel stuff he's done and some of his creator owned stuff, but this was that one didn't work for me. And maybe that's why. Maybe it was too big for the character.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are writing three minute songs, man. You guys, everything's got to be big. Not a whole lot of subtlety going down there, but maybe in the comics, we pace it out a little bit, you know, and it's hard. And I think comics pacing to me, it's super interesting, comics pacing, because you have to do it with the level of tone on the page and how much you pace your images and you want the reader to read. And how quickly you want them to consume information, new information. And I think it's really hard. Folks, when you think about comics, and you think about like, oh, it's a kiddie medium, or it's what I read as a kid. Appreciating it as an adult, you actually start to see some of the language and appreciate it and be like, whoa, it is absolutely an art form and a storytelling style that needs to be learned. And we'll see. I mean, I agree with you. Max Bemis has done some stuff over at Marvel that I've really enjoyed. In this Jed MacKay guy, he is a comic book writer.
Yes, he is a comic book writer. And yeah, he picked it up after a pretty lengthy hiatus on Moon Knight, and it felt like they were trying to bring the character back because of the TV show, in the, you know, thinking, well, if this is a big hit, we should probably have a book on the, you know, every month, a monthly book. And it started back a few months before and really hit the ground running. He's Moon Knight, typically very cerebral character, as we talked about. And so there's usually a lot of internal dialogue. And with this, Jed MacKay said, I don't want any internal dialogue. Everything's going to be spoken. So and he's doing it so far, probably, you know, close to, I would want to say like 30 issues in, something like that. And he's doing a great job, and it's not making it too action packed, which is what's happened with some of the runs where they just go so far action that you lose the sensitivity of the character.
The redundancy of him just beating people up in every panel. Yeah,
exactly. So they do a good job of him, Moon Knight, being troubled and being psychological. One of the plot points is he's in therapy and he's talking to a therapist. So that's part of it that leads him, but he's also running this thing called the Midnight Mission. That's to help people in the neighborhood that need things. He's surrounded himself with some interesting characters, a couple of vampires that are his sidekicks, but MacKay's hitting every beat. Honestly, I mean, it's each new arc is getting better than the previous. And with Moon Knight, that is not typically the case. They usually spill everything the first arc and then it starts to slow down, but
30 issues. He's been on the show. Like 30 issues. Like, they're letting him like cook.
Yeah. There's, I think, four trades out. I want to say that the fourth one just came out, and they're not taking breaks between arcs. They're just powering out one a month.
Don't come on my show and make me spend money. Don't do this.
I'm happy to let you borrow the first arc if you want to just give it a try.
I will not be bribed, damn it, on my own
it's
show.
It's great. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. It's made me fall in love with the character again after a little bumps. Did like the show.
Yeah. How'd that sit with you?
I liked it. I mean, they definitely took some liberties, but I'm okay with it. I liked at the end of the season, there was a little tease for the other personalities, which was cool. Given some room, it's made, I feel like they realized that the character is limited with the schizophrenia. So they wanted to, you know, pacing wise, spread that out a little bit. And I liked it a lot. I liked the new characters. I liked what they did with the gods. Some of it got a little big, like when the gods were fighting like kaiju over the city was a little much for me, but
as cool as that was, I think comic book movies have to be conscious of not falling into what so many of them have delivered, which is the character at the end of the comic movie fighting another version of their own character. We had the Iron Man versus Iron Monger, of course, at the end of Iron Man, and you can say what you will about Spider-Man versus Green Goblin and the flippity characters and on and on and on and on. But that one felt like it could have avoided that and done something pretty interesting. Hitman 3.
There's no shortage of cool Moon Knight villains. Yeah. That's the tragedy.
Yes.
There are some really, really cool Moon Knight specific villains that they could have brought in, and they teased a couple, but they didn't, and nothing against the performances, I thought were great, but I just could have made it a different character.
I love Ethan Hawke too, but
he was incredible.
I always love Ethan Hawke, but I think the answers have to be in the character. I'm going to bring up Ant-Man 3 because Scott didn't defeat Kang in a Scott way. Scott beat the crap out of him. And I don't think Scott wins that fist fight in any version of that character. Scott,
no, definitely not.
Scott is a thief. He is a sneak. And he shrinks. And he tricks you. And that is who Scott is. And he's smart. And he's not going to win a fist fight with Kang or any character who has been stuck in the quantum realm for a millennia, training himself to do nothing but get out and conquer. He is the conqueror. He's not going to lose a fist fight to Scott Lang. And they had an opportunity, having already introduced the quantum storm, that Scott had only escaped out of his love of Cassie and having her as his lodestone barometer to guide him out of that quantum storm. I would have loved an ending where he's getting beat up by Kang. Kang thinks he's defeated. He's going to step through the portal and take on our Earth and escape from the quantum realm. And Scott smiles, and Kang realizes he has a lot of those stickety shrinky-dink devices on his back. And he drops Kang, shrinks him into a quantum storm where Kang has to fight infinite versions of himself, which Kang would never be able to defeat because he will not admit defeat even to versions of himself, which is the whole thing of Kang the Conqueror. He will not be conquered even by himself. I thought that would have been a beautiful ending in a very Scott-based ending to Quantumania, where Scott just is like, bro, it's shrinking-based, it's trickery-based, and it's funny. It's like, sorry, Kang, like, you're done. Shrinks him. And Scott can beat Kang the Conqueror that way, but he's not going to smack him to death. You know, but again, we talk about like all this strike stuff, and I don't know. I mean, you know, then again, I'm there with popcorn day one.
Of course, same. And that's, you know, some of the Marvel, they tend to make everybody a little more punchy in the movies than most of the characters are. I mean, everybody's throwing punches, and, you know, some of them will be a little sneaky and use their brains. You get some of that out of Star-Lord, but it's not too many.
That's what I like about Emil Blonsky in the She-Hulk. Like, they took him away from just being a Hulk version of a big guy who punches and is green sometimes. You know, I like the treatment of Emil Blonsky in She-Hulk. I thought that was fun. I thought She-Hulk was a blast.
Yeah.
I thought it was too. A blast. And I hope, and I was, this is what I daydream about Geekscape is I was thinking about Deadpool 3 and how meta it's going to be and how it's probably going to make fun of all the multiverse stuff. And I was like, I want to see Deadpool meet She-Hulk on screen and have both of them vie for being the fourth wall, like, you know, like panel breaker. I think that's so cool that we find ourselves in a place where She-Hulk on screen could be with Deadpool on screen and they're both vying to break the fourth wall together. And I'm like, you know, and things will get punchy. And that won't be good for Deadpool. But I, guys, this is what I daydream about. I don't daydream about anything but comic books and movies. Talk to me about this indie book you were telling me about. I don't know anything about it. And this thing, it's called Black Cloak.
Yes.
I see it on the stands, but again, like, I'm scared sometimes to pick stuff up on the stands because you don't know if it's going to be canceled or if it's going to run into production problems, what's going to happen with it. And sometimes you end up with your heart broken. You know,
I feel the same way. I've started to trade weight most of my indie books just because for this reason and hoping that, you know, I got burnt by a few Hickman books that didn't even make to the first trade. And I've got like three issues that with a great start. This one first trade just came out. The interesting thing about this book is it started as a crowdfunding thing, like a Patreon or one of those websites where people were giving her money and you were getting the issues there. And then it's Kelly Thompson, who's just, I mean, if you're not reading her Captain Marvel run, like, missing out. Her Marvel stuff's been great. Yeah, that's good.
I was going to say,
she's her West Coast Avengers run was just good fun. I she's one of those, another writer who I just, sight unseen, will buy it. If her name is on it, I will buy it. And her quality of output is great. Did trade weight this. The first trade just came out and it's great. It's sort of dystopian, sci-fi-ish. There's this city that's one of the last, maybe the last city left in existence. Everything's gone to shit. And this prince, who's like the good prince of the princes, he's the well-loved one, turns up dead. And these two characters called Black Cloaks are sent to try to solve the murder mystery, and that's the setup of it, and that's kind of where you get at the end of the first trade. And I could not put it down. I read it straight through, set it down, came back 2 days later, read it again.
That's cool.
Love it. It's really cool, and it's got her humor and her action that she does so well. It's all there.
This is the kind of is that the platform that Brian K. Vaughan does a bunch of stuff on as well, where he's putting things out piecemeal and you buy them piecemeal and then you keep it moving?
Similar. That's Panel Syndicate, which
that's right. Which
is,
Panel Syndicate.
Yeah, Marcos Martin's thing. This one is like you just subscribe to her Substack. That's what she did.
Substack. We saw this day coming. Like, we all saw this day coming where people are going a la carte to the creators they love. You know?
And the creators all did that where a bunch of them left and said, hey, we're going to do the Substack thing. And they're, of course, the numbers drop. So now a lot of them are doing the books in print as well, but they're still doing it early on Substack. But it is well worth it. You know, I can't say enough about how great this book is. It is fantastic.
I'm buying this. I'm buying the Moon.
Are you reading What's Your Furthest Place From Here, Matthew Rosenberg?
Leave me alone, check okay? Like, the guy's only got so many hours in the day and only so many dollars in his pocket, okay? What is this? What are you? Like,
I should have prepped you with this. Sorry.
You remember when you were talking about like keeping secrets earlier? Well, tell me about that.
So what is called that? What's the Furthest Place From Here? Matthew Rosenberg is the writer. Tyler Boss is the artist. So it's the, you know, four kids rob a bank, team back, and Image is putting it out. The second trade has just come out and the third arc has just started. They did a super cool thing too, where the first arc you could buy these issues that also came. The whole thing is the main group is centered around a record store. Basically, it's the end. The world has ended. And it's kids that are all left without adults. And they form these little cults based around the stores or the buildings in, that they occupy. So, they, you know, everybody needs somewhere to live. These groups of kids occupy one a record store. One occupies the carnival. Right. And so they all take on the characters of the thing, the place they inhabit. But because the main group in the first arc was the record store kids, they put out these cool issues that you could buy with that came with 7-inch records with two songs on it by cool bands, Joyce Manor, and like I mean
Rory
great
from the
great
Impossibles song. Worked with Joyce Manor.
Yeah,
Rory Phillips and the Stereo. Yeah. Who's been on Geekscape? Yes. Remember the Stereo episodes of Geekscape? I'm trying to great turn band. You into me. Yeah, great band. Great
anyway,
band.
The book itself is that's the basic premise, and then you find out sort of that there are these group there are these seemingly adult creatures that are sort of the they're the rule enforcers. So if you break a rule, like go out after curfew, then they come in and and once you become an adult, I want to say it's 16 in the book, you have to leave or these things, the strangers come and take you away and no okay. one knows what happens to the adults.
So it's like Logan's Run in a sense.
Sort of, yeah. But much, it seems like it's
more
like
Mad Max.
10 years in the future. Yeah. And then rather than way, way, way in the future, like all the buildings feel like buildings you could walk into now. They're just run down because they've been abandoned sort of, but they're kind of cared for because these different kid cults. It is so good. And Matthew Rosenberg's another person that I buy anything he writes. And this is like some top level writing in general. The world building is wild. And the mystery of the whole thing is so cool because the story itself is engaging enough on its own, but every little piece of the mystery that comes in, you just like, you're like, I can't get enough of that book. It is beautiful. It's one that does suffer a little bit from delays between issues. Not crazy, but sometimes there'll be a month or two between issues.
They all come with albums?
Maybe worth just the first, okay. I want to say six did. And you can buy just the issues and the trades don't. The albums
like
you can
the
get.
Music.
Separate.
I like
it's,
the music.
Yeah, the music's, it's cool too. And
you have respect for my dollar. Like you have no respect for my budgeting. You have no respect. I work hard to budget. I work really hard to. Damn it!
Story,
you come in and you start giving me this crap. Are you kidding me? It's almost like I run a podcast that suggests pop culture stuff to people.
You're the one that wanted me to come on and talk about comics.
Love it.
This is
so
on you,
much, dude. Well, let's get a little more Halloween themed on this next one because you've been thrown back to some serious horror. With the classic EC archive reprints of things like Tales from the Crypt and all that stuff. Tell me about that. Like, are you doing this digitally or are you doing this in print?
I'm doing them in print because the print versions they're gorgeous. They're magazine size. So they're this size, the original, and they've started doing them all. Originally they were all hardback when they did these collections and they were just wildly expensive, like 50, 60 bucks a piece.
Sure.
Now they've started putting them out in these softback versions that are just as nice without the hardcover. And they're like 20 bucks. My local comic shop, if you buy trades, it's all 30% off. So they're reasonably priced.
I'm coming to the west side.
Pulp Fiction Comics in Culver City, for anybody interested. They're fantastic people.
That used to be the comic
great shop.
That used to be Mike Wilson's comic
book? No, it's very close. Comic Bug was a block away. They were like basically on two sides of this one street of Culver Boulevard, basically.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction's, it's right on Sepulveda, like Sepulveda and Culver Boulevard, basically.
Don't
great
do this,
shop.
Man.
Anyway, this
cost me more money.
Each one of these takes six issues of the original book, whatever it is, whether it's Weird Fantasy, Tales from the Crypt, Horror Suspense Stories, etc. They've recolored them and they've relettered them with care, with careful care so it looks fantastic. Because if you try to buy those old magazines, most of the time the text is incredibly blurry. Everything's just faded. And, yeah. and so they've really done a good job without taking away the what makes these comics great. They have these amazing intros to each one of the volumes by somebody cool, like Stephen King or Steven Spielberg, or just anybody who grew up influenced by these books. And they do these mini essays at the beginning, and each person, George Romero does one. I mean, you know, they are fantastic. I can't, every time one of these comes out, I buy it, same thing, unseen, and I'm working my way through these. They're just great. They're just good fun. And the stories, I mean, they're so, you know, you look at these stories and the things they're talking about, and some of the, you know, the horror is quite graphic, and you're thinking this was printed in the 50s. I can't imagine what this had to be blowing people's minds. I mean, this was probably catching your kid with one of these in the 50s. If you were like your average family, was probably like catching your kid with porn in the 80s.
Well, the reason they went to magazine was that Comics Code, right? Like, like Mad Magazine, like anytime when the Comics Code came down, the whole Seduction of the Innocent book by Wortham got published. Like a lot of comic book companies tried to dodge that by turning themselves into magazines, the EC stuff included. But I'm saying, like, you got that feeling of being a 6-year-old and seeing those Tales of the Crypt episodes or reading the Tales of the Crypt comics from that you found it like an old, I mean, when we went to old comic conventions at like the Holiday Inn or something, we'd always be looking for all the horror stuff or the, we talked about all those
thrift stores were good. Thrift stores and like swap meets were great places as well.
And then you laid your eyes on the first Frank Frazetta Conan and or Red Sonja, and you were like, it's what a woman is. Oh my goodness. I'm feeling things like I'm watching the Bengals perform again. And I mean, so many of those places were places of discovery. And I wonder if there are digital equivalents of them for kids these days. I mean, clearly you're going to sit your kid down now that she's 6 years old and give her the same experience watching a knife finger wielding child killer terrorize a bunch of kids. And obviously you're going to sit her down and watch Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, right? Like, you're going to do that now. You're a parent of a 6-year-old. You're going to give her the same treatment you did, right?
She has no interest. Even I'm telling you, she really doesn't. Because my wife had this thing. She's like, you're going to do the same thing, aren't you? When she's that age. And I was like, let's see what her interests are. Let's have this conversation later, but I'm not going to say no. And then even that I was brought her out. She's always interested in what I'm doing. It's the studio that I do all the music out of it's in the back of our house. So I brought her out. She wanted to see what I was doing, cause I'd finished the first run of this score for the short. And my daughter was just like, it's going to be scary. It's going to be scary. And it's like, I promise you I'll stop. You know, horror doesn't just start usually from the first scene, but I mean, she was like, I had to stop it like a minute before it got to anything. Cause she was so freaked out about potentially seeing like something even remotely scary. She doesn't even, her best friend loves the show Wednesday. And she tried to watch it, and she like 10 minutes in, she's like, no, this is too creepy, which breaks my heart. But
guys, I did that
person.
I saw her like, what, she puts a bunch of piranhas in like a swimming pool, and I was like, nah, we good.
And I'm like that Michael Jackson meme with popcorn, just like
I mean, I'm sure it was awesome. I'm a big Luis Guzman fan, of course. He's my pick for James Bond. You and I discussed that. I don't know. I will see. I mean, Beetlejuice too. I gotta see it, right? I watch all the Scream movies. Yeah. I like some of that stuff. My dream job would obviously be a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Not like, I mean, no offense to Sam Baer and what they went for on that one, but you know, we got to take it back to the old school. You know, Robert Englund, who's been on Geekscape as well. And if you're into that stuff, like there's that Robert Englund documentary, those boys who did the documentary were on Geekscape within the past couple months. That was a great conversation about all things Robert Englund. Kai, we could go forever, dude. This is so much fun talking about it. I cost you some dollars. Go get those Titan books. Conan.
Yes. Oh yes. I'm going to go pick up my pull list tomorrow, and I'm going to ask them if they have the first
two issues of Conan the Barbarian from Titan Books. It's fantastic. I really am enjoying them, and they feel like 70s Conan comics and what Dark Horse did when they first got those
books. Excited.
I was stoked. You know, like, I'm going to buy it because I love the character and I love Sword and Sorcery and I love fantasy comics. And then I was like, okay, let's see how they treat Conan in this iteration. And it was awesome. and it was the way it should have been. And it felt right. So enjoy that. Geekscape is, like I said, I could talk to Kai Dodson for a long time, and maybe you want to reach out to him. So let's talk socials. Where can people reach you on social media? How can they keep up with projects? Like if Army of Freshmen comes back, doesn't have a D in front of it. Army of Freshmen is just Army of Freshmen.
Say whatever you want. The first record did say the, and then we dropped it for brevity's sake because the name was long enough. But do whatever you want.
Like A Newfound Glory?
Exactly.
Right.
Same idea. Only.
All right.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, yeah, all my socials are on. I'm mostly on Instagram. I still do have an X account, but you and I talked about this the other night. It's gone to the, it's a wasteland now. So, I'm probably going to hop on the Threads thing. Our mutual friend Linus was talking me into it the other day. And then I'm not on the Facebook, but you can find me at Obi-Wan Kenobi is my personal account. And then at Dodsy Music, Dodsy Music is my music account. So if you want to follow me for like music stuff, the latter is probably better. The other one is just literally, I mostly post stories and it's usually just pictures of my daughter doing things. So.
As it should be.
I'm fully dadded out.
If people Google Kai Dodson Instagram, they're going to find the Obi Kai.
Yeah.
Obi. It's like Obi Kenobi, yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi, but it's Kai instead of Ken, right?
Am I getting that right? Exactly right.
Obi Kai.
Exactly. Obi-Wan Kai.
Kenobi.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Geekscape. I think we got this.
Yeah, and it's a private account. So if you're a Geekscape person, just shoot me a message and explain, because I'm trying to keep the spam and the weirdos away from pictures of my
friends. Oh, no. Yes, do that.
Yes.
Do that, because they are weird. But then, ultimately, we here at Geekscape embrace the chaos.
Yes. Yes. Well, say me too. Just send me a message and I'll accept. I always try to dig in and make sure I'm not saying no to somebody. Yeah, that
or exposing your... like making your family vulnerable to all sorts of weirdos who might start stalking your kid. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's a pretty understandable concern. Geekscape, you can stalk us all you want. We're at Geekscape. Just search for Geekscape on any of the socials. You can find me, Jonathan London, on the socials. JonathanGeekscape.net. If you want to tell me what your babysitter led you to as a kid, what they were maybe looking the other direction or just had on, because F it. Kids got to learn sometime. And you ended up finding that thing that you still enjoy today. Babysitters are great for that. You can find us on all the socials and all that. And of course, Geekscape is, I think we're going to be back with another musician next week. My friend Tom Kiger from Houston Calls. Speaking of Drive-Thru Records and that whole era, one of my first music videos I did for those boys. And Tom and I have reconnected online, and the band has done a couple reunion shows and this and that, and I was like, Tommy, you're doing some music and I love you, man, and we need to reconnect. So it's the best way to do it, have them right here on Geekscape, and you guys can connect with them as well when you come on here. That's what this is for. Geek connections, the fabric that holds us all together and gives us a little bit more emotional, mental stability again as we fly through vacuum on a multi. Love you guys. I'll see you guys next week, and go check out Kai's stuff. Okay, peace, my friends. Peace. Hold on tight. We're flying through vacuum, like I said.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.